Okay, I felt a little bit like I was in seminary when I was preparing this chabura, because in yeshiva nobody ever reads a Ramban that long, which is page 1, 2, and 3. But I remember many times Ariella coming home and being like, I have to read all this and memorize this and whatever. And last year she came back and was like, oh my gosh, I have to prepare this for Mechlala. What am I going to do? So I did feel a little bit like that. So I spent like the better part of today and yesterday with the Art Scroll Ramban, and I helped it. It helped a lot. So we're actually not going to we're actually not going to do the entire Ramban inside, but we'll do big parts of it. Did someone see the message from David? I think he might be on the wrong chat. Or not the wrong chat. He might be on the wrong Zoom, ironically. Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. I thought it was one of my kids responding to something, and then I saw that. Okay. So I want to try to I want to try a little bit to understand the story of Shechem and Chamor. We'll just share with you well, we're gonna like stall hopefully for a minute or so till David gets on. But last week, Surly David and I had an awesome 4 days together. They could share pictures and everything with you. But we toured Tanakh from Monday to Thursday. And so on Wednesday, we went to Shiloh, which is an awesome place. And we were supposed to go to Anatot, the home of Yirmiyahu. But our tour guide said, why don't we go to Har Gerizim instead? So I was like, all right, let's do it. We all agreed that that was the way to go. And I have shared this story with a few people, so I'm not as embarrassed anymore. But we got up to the top of Har Gerizim, and you could look down and you see Shechem. And Shechem is actually quite big, much bigger than I ever could have imagined. And from the top of Shechem, our tour guide pointed out where the old city of Shechem is, Tel Shechem, the mound of ancient Shechem. And my first reaction was, and Surly and David could attest to it, was that's it. It's not so big, which kind of makes the whole story of Shimon and Levi not as impressive. If they wiped out the current city of Shechem, so a 12 and 13-year-old having done that would be pretty impressive. But I don't know, the entire old city of Shechem could not be that much bigger than, a few square blocks. And so I don't know, it kind of takes a little bit away from it. But nonetheless, killing an entire city of people by yourself is something of an accomplishment. So there's really two questions I want to try to understand tonight. I want to try to understand the justification for killing the entire city, and whether that was okay. And I think the bigger piece of it is, what's Yaakov's sense of that, right? The first question is really, what does God feel? Is God at peace with them killing out a whole city? And then the second question is, what about Yaakov? Yeah, Yaakov has reactions. So this is what we've done in the past, but what's Yaakov's reaction, and how does he really feel about it? And that's really the goal tonight, to try to understand a little bit better. So with that, let's start from the first source. But what I did was, I gave this shiur on Tuesday night. And I started from Pasuk Aleph, and what I found was that you get bogged down in the Psukim at the beginning. You don't really get to see the end. So the beginning is basically Dina is kidnapped. She's raped, and then you have the negotiation with Chamor and Shechem. What's interesting is that Chamor comes, and read the Psukim carefully over Shabbos, and you'll see that I don't think I'm making this up. Chamor comes and says, listen, Yaakov, sons, we got to come up with a plan. Let's create a strategic alliance, some sort of bond. We'll become friends. That's what he says. And it kind of seems like it's tactful diplomacy. My son messed up. He, you know, did something that was inappropriate. I think we have to figure this out. But then Shechem says at the end, if you look, it's like Pasuk, maybe Yud Aleph and Yud Bet, right before this, he comes and says, I'll do anything, whatever you want. You just tell me, I want Dina. Now, maybe it's a little bit noble in the sense that he raped the girl and is still interested in her, as opposed to the story of Amnon, where he rapes his sister, or half-sister, and when it's all over, then he's like, forget it, I'm done, I have no interest, and he kicks her out. But there's almost like an impulsive immaturity to Shechem, whereas Hamor has a little bit of sophistication to what he's doing. And I think that that's an important piece to understand as the backstory for this story. And I don't think that the psukim would make sense without having an appreciation of that. So my only recommendation is over Shabbos, now that we'll be finished, try to look at the psukim all together and see how they play themselves out. So Vayanu b'nei Yaakov et Shechem et Hamor aviv v'mirma v'daberu asher timei et dina chotam. I read this psukim many times in my life, and it never bothered me until I read it to, you know, yesterday, the day before. But there seems to be extra words in there. So I want you to think for a sec, what is extra in it? Vayanu, I'm sorry. Okay, I hear. Yeah, I hear that. So the answer, I guess, the answer is to who they're answering, and then the Vayedaberu is they're speaking. Okay, I hear that. That's a little bit extra. Anybody else? Right, you don't need that. That's true. I'm sorry. Hold on a half a second. No, that's from the shadow. Okay. Good night, sweetie. All right, sorry. One of my kids got back. The Dina Achotan we don't need. But even that, the entire back phrase, Asher Vayidaberu, Vayinu b'nei Yaakov et Shechem et Hamor aviv b'mirma v'daberu, that makes sense, right? They're answering Shechem et Hamor for what they said. But then it says, Asher Timei et Dina Achotan, that they defiled, or that he defiled their sister. Like, how does that connect to the pasuk? So is it a justification of the bimirma? The reason why they did the bimirma is because asher timei dina chotam. It seems that those words just don't fit into the pasuk. So Art Scroll changes it and says not vaydaberu asher timei dina chotam, but it says vaydaberu because he defiled dina. Meaning, Art Scrolls, English translation, recognizes that there is a uncomfortable read to the pasuk, and so by changing it to because, it gets rid of the problem. But maybe there's another possibility also. So the Sfarno says, Heshivu sheminu hanedivut shamru shchem v'aviv lasot lo ayiru'im achta achrei shetimei kederech etnan zona. So they reject Shechem's offer, says the Sfarno, would appear like a payoff to a prostitute, right? What happened? The girl was raped, and now they come and say, we want the girl, and name your price. If they were to come and say, we want, I don't know, $10,000, $100,000, $1 million, name your price, it would end up seeing like, it would seem to be like a transaction with a prostitute. So they say, we can't discuss it in terms like this because asher timei et dina chotam. So what do we have to do? We're going to come up with a completely different plan. The plan that we're going to come up with will actually show that this has nothing to do with payment, but rather it is a marriage of our nations. That's the Sfarno's explanation. So vayomru aleihem lo nuchal lasot hadavar hazeh latet achotenu lishta asher lo arla ki charpa hi lanu. So what do they answer? They answer that we can't do this. we can't let our sister marry. You want to marry our sister. We're not willing to do that. Why? Because we won't allow our sister to marry someone who has an arla, who has a foreskin, because it's disgusting to us. If you want the benefit of becoming one with us, you have to circumcise all your males. And then we'll give our daughters to you, your daughters will come to us, and we'll live together. We'll be one nation. But if you're not willing to listen and circumcise, we'll take our daughter and we'll go. So Shechem says, I want Dina. Hamor says, let's figure out how to make an alliance. What do they answer here?
Basically, you have to become more one of us before we can even consider any proposal.
Okay, good. Yeah, we have to be.
It should have been more of, you accept God as monotheism, then circumcision, but they did not. So.
Right. No, I hear. I definitely hear that. So right, if it was legit, you would think that there would be more of like a conversion process, something a little bit more from than just getting a bris milah. But the thing is, it doesn't seem like they actually agree in these psukim to let Dina marry Shechem. Right?
It's implied, but from Yadalad, but yeah.
They tell them what they want to hear.
Okay, yeah.
If you want to make an alliance, here's our proposal for making an alliance. We'll get the details later. Yeah, this might hurt. But they're telling them what they want to hear.
Right. But what's interesting is they seem to avoid the question of Dina. They say, we can't give Dina to you. Okay. Go get a bris. And if you don't get a bris, We're gonna take our sister and move on, or take our daughter and move on.
We'll take our daughter.
Yeah. It starts off achotenu and ends off bitenu. So anyway, the fact that it ends with bitenu means that who's part of the conversation?
Are you applying it to Yaakov? Because
these
kids are only 13 years old, I mean...
No, they're following Tezai. Tezai, Nibu, Senu, Spinu, Senu, and they're following that up. And if not, then we take our daughters and we go.
That's interesting. Like, how would Bitenu would be our one daughter, right? Mati, what do you think? You're like our resident grammarian? I don't know.
Yeah, Bitenu, hold your own.
I don't, right, if it was our daughters, it would be Benotenu. Right, Yaakov.
It's a general, like daughters of Israel. It's a colloquial term for all of our women.
Right, so let's just, is Yaakov part of the conversation anyway?
No.
Is Yaakov physically present?
It's unclear, but from later perspective, it seems like he's not, but it's unclear.
Right, so a lot of the Mefarshim do seem to imply that Yaakov is there. The reason why the B'nai Yaakov answer is, what happened was so bad that it's just not appropriate for Yaakov to be the one to deal with it. So he kind of sits and watches as his sons are the ones negotiating. But I think that's an important point. If Yaakov is there, then that kind of leaves us with the question afterwards, how could Yaakov be upset at his kids? He kind of knew that this was happening. And did he really think, oh yeah, this bris milah is really going to happen? Not so clear. But let's take a look at the Nitziv, because the Nitziv points out, Asher timei dina chotam, that is, again, going back to Pasuk Yedalit, Heru lo ladaki biyat shchem etor znut hitumah lefi kedushat Yisrael. So there, the pasuk is telling us that what Shechem did was considered adultery by the standards of the Jewish people. Al kein hema einam mitratzim levakasha Shechem b'shum ofen, and for that reason they completely ignore what Shechem says. Avol levakashat chamor sheiklalit al ze onim benachad. They're willing to answer chamor, but they're not willing to answer Shechem. And that's what I was saying. If you read Yud Dalet to Yud Zayin carefully, what you'll notice is that the conversation seems to be willing to address the idea of us becoming a strategic alliance. But the question of Dina and Shechem marrying her is never in the cards. They say, it's implied, listen, you know, if you do this, blah, blah, blah. But they don't really say outright, you can have Dina. Just an interesting way of reading the psukim. Okay.
No, they're saying daughters, and then they're saying calling Dina they daughter. If you take a single out of a plural, it's still part of the plural.
Right. So maybe again, it seems like there's implication that David said, right? They tell them what they want to hear. So they could read this as, yeah, you know, we're gonna make this alliance, and with alliances, all of our daughters will be able to marry one another. That's good, and once all of our daughters are marrying each other, of course, implicit in that is that you're going to get Dina. But they never once actually agree to that, which also it could speak to the Sfarno's point. She was, you know, under the circumstances, it sounds like they're selling her then. Is that what they're doing? They're selling her off to make peace with the people of Shechem? It's not so clear. But it seems like the Netziv wants to avoid that and say that wasn't really the conversation at all. So what happens in Pasuk Yud Chet? Vayitfu divrei b'nei chamor v'nei Shechem ben chamor. So everything was fine. Shechem and Chamor and Shechem are okay with it. Lo echar hanar lasota davar ki chafetz v'vat Yaakov u'nichbat mikol beit aviv. And the young man did not wait at all. He was so happy. He didn't delay because he wanted to marry Bat Yaakov, and he was the most respected person in the house of his father. So also, this is like so weird. He's like running to get a bris milah. So Shari Aaron says his yetzer hara moved him to act so quickly. Why? Ki chafetz bevat Yaakov. There was nothing here religious in nature. It wasn't, he has this like epiphany, he wants to be from, he's going to get a bris milah, to Greg's point of maybe perhaps it's like gayrus or whatever. No, he wanted the girl, and he wanted her quickly. And it's consistent with what he said beforehand. He's like, I'll do whatever you want. I'll pay you any price. Now he's saying, okay, great. You named your price. I'm doing it. You could almost imagine he walked out of there, found a moel, chopped his foreskin, and was like, I'm good now. So what happens?
Vayavo chamor. You can also imagine all the brothers going, he said yes.
Right. Well, I think, I don't remember who says it. Maybe it was the Ramban, maybe not. But I don't think they always assumed that Shechem was gonna Shechem and Chamor were gonna say yes, which kind of makes sense, right? Name your price, okay? You know, Shechem and Chamor are coming to the table expecting to pay a lot of money, and they get off. I don't know if easy is the right word, but okay, elective surgery. It's minor, and you know you can. Some people's faces don't view it so much as minor, but
Wouldn't these people sacrifice their children if their God called upon them to do so? So they're kind of out there.
Right, but I guess if you sacrifice your child, and if that's culturally normal, so then the emotional piece is sort of lost. It's physically not painful to the person that's... Right, I'm saying, but the other person is dead, so at that point they're not feeling it anymore. I don't know, the thought of having Mila when you're not 8 days old is probably a little bit more painful. You know, certainly the idea of doing it as a as a young man or an adult is pretty pretty rough, but they seem to be okay with it. But what about the city? Vayavo chamor shchem beno al shari ram veyedabru al anshei ram lemor hanashim ha'ele shlemim him yitanu veyishvu ba'aretz v'yisachru ota ba'aretz hinei rachva yedayim lefnehem benotam nikach lanu lanashim v'benoteinu nitan lehem. So Shechem, Hamor and Shechem come to the gate of the city, and they speak to everybody there, saying, these people are at peace with us, they're not upset. Now, that means that they must know that there was a reason for them to be upset, which means that the people of the city must know that Shechem kidnapped and raped Dina. But he says, the land is big, and they want to marry into us. But they have one condition, to be one nation. You could have it all. You could have all the Jews' wealth. There's one little tiny request. They just need us to get Mila. It's all, we'll get all of their wealth and they'll stay with us. They all listen, they agree. And they circumcise all the males of the city, anyway that goes through the city gate. Okay? Oh, so before we go on, so we know the end, they're going to die. Do they deserve to die? And if so, what in the psukim would make you feel that they deserve death?
Maybe Chav Gimel, maybe. The Hello Lanoheim, like they're straight up there. They're assumed, I don't know.
Okay, yeah, the thought that, I mean, it sounds like they're in for their stuff. They want the Jews' wealth. This is not, you know, they're not in it for like good reasons. But they want the Jews' wealth, so God, you know, God, if that's the case, then what they did is immoral, and they deserve to die. Okay, anybody else? Good answer, Shmuel.
Well, the fact that they, you know, they knew that something was had happened, which might cause them to be worried about the peace or not. Means they not only do they know, but they were in on it. They didn't go back and say, hey, wait a second, you can't do this.
Good. So that's the general answer that I always grew up with was that they were bystanders, and we often if a bystander doesn't do anything, did they do anything wrong? And the answer is yeah. If you see an injustice and you don't act up, so you're completely, completely at fault. And therefore, says Racha, says many, they deserve to die. Okay, so let's...
That might be true, but clearly there was a significant distrust here on both sides, right? Because if you look at Yudayim, it ends with, we're going to take our sister and we're out of here.
I always felt like those were empty...
Not killing them.
I always felt those were empty words. Like,
that's true, but if you can kind of see... You know, listen to the negotiation going on here. It doesn't say you guys are done. It's, we're out of here. We'll see you. You know, that's kind of the way that the pasuk looks. So clearly there's significant, major, major distrust here.
I don't know. I read it sort of more like it's like a negotiating tactic. This is our offer. Take it or leave it. And if not, we're going to walk away. And they...
Right.
And
it doesn't say anywhere that there's a threat of death.
No, for sure not. Oh, there's no question.
There's no allusion to it either.
Right. No, the bimir ma, whatever that means, whether it's deceitful with trickery or with cunning, however you want to read it. Yeah, I don't think the people of Shechem saw this coming.
Right.
Okay.
Well, did they or didn't they? But they have gone to these lengths knowing Yaakov and his family were big, powerful... small nation of their own, the amount of people they came back with. So if their reputation is shot by saying, we took and raped basically the princess of Bnei Yaakov, what's it gets out and the other nations, no one's going to work with them either. Are they trying to save themselves?
You're saying the people of Shechem are trying to save themselves?
Right, because if it gets out that they took a princess of another people and raped her and tried to play it off, then no other tribe nation around them was going to trust them either.
I mean, it's an interesting read on that. I never felt that the people of Shechem were really concerned about that. I think they kind of look and say it's a small tribe, you know, at best. You know, this is what we did. I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I always felt it was more Yaakov that was concerned what everybody else would say as opposed to the other way around. But it's a possibility. So pasuk chaf hey, vayi bayom shlishi biotam koavim. It's the third day when they are all in a lot of pain. Vaykchu shnei bnei Aaron, Shimon v'Levi achidina ish charbo vayavol yer betach vayergu kol zachar. So this is the clear indication that the people of Shechem did not see it coming. It's the third day. They're all in terrible pain. They're in their city, but they're secure. They're not worried. And Shimon and Levi come and wipe out the entire city. So the Gur Aryeh, the Maral, asks a great question. He says, in general, we have a rule in Dvarim that if you're going to attack a city, that the Karayla L'Shalom, that you have to call out in peace first. So before you destroy a city, you have to, you know, throw out overtures of peace. And if they reject it, then you can go and kill the people. Says, why don't the Jews do that also here? So he says that if the people did something that was so egregious first, so then you don't have to do that at all. We see that by Midian. The Jews don't call out to Midian after the whole thing with Peor in Bamidbar, but they go, Nikom Nikma Tsurata Midyanim Hikita Motam, they go and they kill the people of Midian. Okay, that's the Maharal. So now let's take a look at the end of the story. Does Yaakov know what happened or what the plan was? And did he disapprove? After they kill the city, they kill Shechem and Hamor as well. They take Dina back from the house of Shechem. And then they plunder the city. The tzon and the bakar, all the animals they take for them. And they take all the children and the women. And they loot the city. So what do they say? Yaakov says to Shimon and Levi, achartem oti. It's a weird word. You achartem oti, to make me smell bad to the people of this city, or the surrounding cities rather, and I'm a small amount. V'nesfu alai, they're going to come and surround me, v'ikuni v'nishmati anu v'eti, and they're going to kill us and destroy us. Pasuk lamed aleph, v'yomru hachazonai yaset achotenu. And Shimon Levi answer back, what do you mean? You can't treat our sister like this. So I'm going to ask you two questions. I'm going to ask you to think about it while I share with you a side comment. Did Yaakov know what was going to happen? Did Yaakov know even of the Bris Mila thing? That's number one. And number two is, did he disapprove of what happened? And if so, what are the reasons he disapproved of Shimon Levi's actions? So we didn't translate the word achartem, right? We did not. It's a hard word. But I will point out that the word achar, ayin chaf resh, is used twice in Tanakh as an ocher. A person who is an ocher Yisrael, he is a person that ruins the Jewish people. Okay, Cerulean and David, you're not allowed to answer. Anybody know who was an ocher Yisrael? Even if you get one of two, I'd be impressed. Okay, so the first one is
Yeshua and Yericho.
Achan is an Ocher Yisrael, and the second one is Eliyahu. He's an Ocher Yisrael. The two stories seem to have nothing to do with each other. What is Eliyahu when he meets up with Achav after, right before the showdown of Anhara Carmel? What is him being an Ocher Yisrael there? What does that have to do with Achan? So Rabbi Samet suggests something amazing that I think could possibly be the key to understanding the word Acharta Moti, is that what Achan was accused of doing was, it was self-serving. Why didn't you take this stuff? Because you saw a nice coat and some gold and some jewelry and you got excited by it, and it was for your benefit. Achav accuses Eliyahu of doing the same thing. The reason why you've done everything you've done is because you're an Ocher Yisrael. You did it for self-serving purposes. That is how Rabbi Samet understands it. But perhaps you can actually say the same thing here. Yaakov is saying to Shimon Levi, what you did is achartem oti, is you made me look like I'm opportunistic. Why? Because what do the people do wrong? The people, they loot the city. When they loot the city, what does that say?
This is all about money.
Right. The reason why we did, maybe we used Dina as a pretense, but we took the spoils of a massive city. Okay, maybe it's not so massive, but maybe by those standards it was pretty massive. We took that money. It was self-serving. It was for us. Right, that's what you could perhaps suggest, and then maybe then Yaakov's issue is not the fact that they avenge Dina, but it's how they go about it and how it's going to be perceived as by everybody else. It won't be perceived as you did this for the sake of your sister. Meaning, if they had done it for the sake of their sister, l'shem shamayim, what would have happened? Then perhaps people could have said, "Oh, you know, that's amazing. We don't feel that there's a threat because we didn't do anything to your family and nobody else is going to do anything in retaliation." But when it comes out this way, so maybe it'll be perceived differently. Okay, that is that's the another answer. Okay, we're all good? Okay, I'm going to skip the Ramban. The Ramban is actually very, very, very long. And even though it is earlier, so maybe people aren't quite as tired as at 10 o'clock at night. It would probably take a good 10-15 minutes to go through the Ramban. So I'll just point out that the Ramban asks, what's going on here? What are they really saying? And he says on page 2, take a look at the end of the first line, Yesh kan sheila, shadavar nireh ki beretzon avio vatzato anu. They answered in his presence, if he knows what they're up to, why does he get angry? And then he says, all the brothers were in it. So why is it that he only curses them? That's his question. So he suggests that Shimon Levi, their problem was that they wanted to avenge the city, and then they end up killing all the people. Okay, so that is a possibility. He then suggests that the Rambam says that Bnei Noach were mitzuveh to set up courts. The courts should have been set up. Had there been courts set up, they would have prosecuted. And Shechem and Chamor deserve to die. The fact that the city doesn't do that, they therefore are just as guilty, and they deserve to die as well. The Ramban rejects it and says the Rambam is wrong. He says Yaakov probably should have delegated to kill them himself. They need courts, but just because you have courts doesn't, if you don't set up courts, you're not chayiv misa. Yerushalmi says that a Jewish dayan cannot walk away from a case. A non-Jewish dayan can walk away from a case that he doesn't feel comfortable prosecuting, and nobody will have any problems on him. So he says it just doesn't make any sense at all. So the Ramban offers his own answers, but I'm going to share with you Rabbi Riskin. Rabbi Riskin quotes the Emes LeYaakov, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says that Shechem and Chamor, I'm not sure if this is actually, I didn't see the Rav Yaakov inside, but this is Rabbi Riskin's interpretation of it. He says Shechem and Chamor are terrorists, and the truth is the whole city is a city of terrorists. And he says the only way to beat terrorism is you have to stand up to them. The brothers were correct. If they had sat by, then what would have happened? The people would have taken advantage of the Jewish people. They made a statement loud and clear, you don't mess with the Jews. And Yaakov was okay with it. How do we know Yaakov was okay with it? Because when Yaakov gives brachos and klalos, take a look at Reuven's bracha. What does he say? He says, Reuven, you were my bechor, you're not. You don't possess the ability to lead. I've taken it away from you. That's what he says to Reuven. What he says to Shimon and Levi is, Arur apam, I'm cursing your anger, but vayifitzem Yisrael, he scatters them amongst the Jewish people. For what reason does he scatter them? Says the Medrash, that he scatters them, the Levium, Shevet Levi becomes the Levium, the religious leaders of the Jewish people, and Shevet Shimon become the teachers. If you did not feel that these people were good people, why would you gift them being the leaders religiously and the teachers? It does not sound like something that you would want to make people that you don't agree with. So then why does Yaakov get angry? So this is a brilliant, brilliant answer. Yaakov Kamenetsky says that the reason why he got angry was Yaakov was telling them, you are correct. When something like this happens, you're supposed to stand up. We don't sit idly by when something like this happens, but we can't make a lifestyle of it. This is a one-time occurrence. He said, Rabbi Riskin uses the example of seasoning when you're cooking. If you put a little bit of seasoning in, you enhance what you're cooking. But if you dump a lot of seasoning in, you ruin your cooking. He says that's really what Yaakov is saying. Yaakov is saying that there are moments in a nation's existence where one has to season a little bit in of this very radical, zealous approach to people that do things to us. But if that becomes our way of life, then we lose our ability as the Jewish people. Right? We're no longer the Jewish people who are people that are kind and rachmanim and have what to offer to the world. But instead, we end up becoming just like them. We have to stand up for ourselves. But if we're doing it all the time like that, then it becomes our way of life and it's not really the way to go. That is how he understands the story and that's how he explains it. So I think it's fascinating because really what comes out is that Yaakov agreed with what they did. And Yaakov wasn't opposed to what they did. He just wanted them to know that the message was, this is not going to be the way you're going to behave going forward regularly. But when something comes up that requires it, I fully sign off that that's the way to behave.